Right. Is that okay? Okay, brilliant. So those of you who don't know me that well, I was thinking about the other day. I thought, I work in the IT sector. I've worked in IT. I worked out this weekend for 25 years now. When you work in the corporate sector, one of the things that comes up is business travel, traveling for work. Now, it's a real Marmite thing. It's either some things people love. I've got people I work with, and any excuse to go somewhere, they're in. Oh, it volunteers. And I've got to admit, I'm the other side. I've got a young family, so I'm not a massive fan of traveling, but I do have to do a little bit. And I know full well that when I travel, there is, and my wife's just going off to creche, so it's a safe time for me to say it. Oh, she's not. I thought she was, oh, no. I've got to admit, travelling with family is quite stressful when you've got all the kids and everything. When you're on your own, it's a bit of me time. I get to read the book I want to read, I listen to the music, watch the film I want to. It actually is quite relaxing. You can get into a good frame of mind. Now, the first time I ever did a big travel, I actually went and worked in the US for 2 months. And when I was coming back, I was quite new to it. I was sitting in the departure area, and I'd been there for 2 months. I was properly homesick, and I was desperate to get home. And I was sitting there, and I was waiting, get on this flight, get home, finally, after 2 months. And they said, Mr. Wayland, would you please approach the desk? And I thought, oh, what's this about? You know, all the, oh, no, they're going to bump. And they said, I'm really sorry, but we've got a family that need to travel together, so we need to give your seat up. I worked with customer service stuff. So you don't moan at them. It's not their fault. It's what they have to do. So I was like, oh, okay. They go, so we've upgraded you to business class. Well, hello then. Now we're talking. And I'm not going to be going right. I'm going to be going left. So that was my first experience. Now, what I then found from talking to people is this is a regularly common occurrence for people travelling on their own. So business travellers, because you're on your own, also you tend to be dressed in the right attire to be travelling in the posh end of the plane. So this tended to happen. And because of that, now, when I'm sitting there on my business trip, I'm there listening out. Are they going to call my name? Is today the day? So I haven't got my headphones in. I haven't got my nose in my book. I'm sitting there. Ready. Is today the upgrade day? Unfortunately, not often it is. But that mindset of being ready, I am in that mindset of I've got to be listening, I've got to be ready. And we're going to listen to someone this morning, and we're going to talk about someone, Jacob, and his response to God and how he responded to God. So we're going to look at Genesis 46, which is the bit here. So this was the story of like Jacob being called to go to Egypt. So in verse 1 it says, so Israel, which was his name then, set out all that was his. And when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to the God and his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in a vision and said, Jacob, Jacob, here I am, he replied. I am God, the God of your father, he said. Do not be afraid, go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you and surely bring you back again. And Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. Then Jacob left Beersheba. Israel's son took their father Jacob and their children and their wives and their carts that Pharaoh had sent to them to transport him. So Jacob and all his offspring went to Egypt, taking with them their livestock, their possessions, all they'd acquired in Canaan. Jacob brought with him to Egypt his sons, grandsons and daughters and granddaughters and all his offspring. All that went to Egypt with Jacob, those who were his direct descendants, not counting his sons' wives, numbered 66 people. And the two sons who had been born to Joseph in Egypt and the members of Jacob's family, which went to Egypt, were 70 in all. So we see there Jacob's response. God says, Jacob, Jacob, here I am. Now, what does that sort of person, you know, what life has somebody led that comes to that response? So when God says his name, here I am, is his first response. So I want to just dig into a little bit of Jacob's life and where the journey he went on and why that was his response. So who was Jacob? So last week, Felix spoke about Abraham and his son Isaac. Well, Jacob was Isaac's son. He was actually a twin. Now, his twin brother was Esau, and they were very different. Now, Esau, they talk about he was a rugged, hairy man who liked the outdoors and liked to go hunting. Jacob, not so much. He stayed at home. He was doing work at home. He was shepherding, but he got on really well with his mum. But he was very smooth. He wasn't hairy. So they were very different. Now, straight off the bat, you learn a bit about his character. because part of his thing was he was a little bit resentful, I think, that he'd been second. He was a twin. His brother had come first, and in their culture, he would have got all the birthrights of being the oldest son. They got the birthright, the blessing. Everything would have gone to him as the oldest. And let's be clear, with twins, they're minutes apart, and he just missed out on it. So he was always a little, I think as you can see it in the way it was in, he was a bit resentful. But actually, Esau, he was less bothered. He didn't really care that much. He was not fussed about it at all. So one of the first things you see about his character is he traded the birthright with Esau. So Esau come back, and he was out, he'd been hunting, he'd been away for a few days, and he came back, and he was famished. And I always sit there and think about it, that they were probably late teens, early 20s. Now, I know, having done youth work, I know what teenage boys are like, and early 20s. And he was, I'm dying! I haven't eaten! And he was starving. And, you know, Jacob spotted his chance. He just made a really good stew. He'd worked at home with his mum. He could make some good food. So he said, hey, look, how about I give you this stew? And this is the word. He said, look, I'm going to die. Esau said, what good is a birthright to me? I'm going to die if I'm so hungry. But Jacob said, swear to me. And he swore an oath to him and sold his birthright. So he gave over his birthright for a meal, which was a bit foolish for Esau. But Jacob already started to show his character. He was a bit swindly, a bit sneaky. So the next bit was, again, egged on by his mum, because he'd become his mum's favourite. Rebecca said, I think we could steal the blessing as well. And he's like, well, how am I going to do that? I have to go to my dad, and he's got a prayer of me. He's going to know I'm not my brother. He's burly. Well, they said, well, no, we can do this. So they dressed him up in his clothes. So he was quite old. He would have perhaps not been able to see very well, but he would have been perhaps smelt that it was his son's clothes, felt his clothes. But also, they put goat skins on his neck and hands. So he had the feeling of a bit of a hairy person. So they went in, and again, so he snuck in, and his elderly father prayed his blessing on his favourite oldest son. But, of course, when Esau came home, he was furious. He's like, not only have I traded away, now he's getting annoyed. So at that point, he actually vowed to kill his brother. And that's the point when Rebecca realises, this isn't good. I need to get my favourite son out. So she actually sent him away. She sent him away to Laban, who was her brother in Haran. She sent him away to go and look after a long way away, travel away, to get away from Esau's wrath. So he went away, and when he arrived, he met one of his cousins, who was Rachel, and he was like, she is very beautiful. And he was at that age, was like, I want to find a wife. This is the wife for me. He's like, I'm going to go and talk to my uncle and say, this is the lady I met. His uncle, he was a little bit, okay, yeah, sure, but you're going to have to do something. You're going to have to earn my daughter's hand in marriage. So I need 7 years of hard work out of you. Well, he obviously was very in love with her because he agreed to this. And he worked 7 years very high. And when it came to the wedding, he was very excited. He got married. And then when he finally revealed who he'd married the older sister. And the reason for this was that his uncle said, well, it's our tradition. The oldest must always get married first. And he said, but I wanted to marry the younger. He said, well, that's still available for another 7 years. And in those days, they often had multiple wives. So he was very focused on, he wanted to marry Rachel. So he worked again for another 7 years. And then he did marry Rachel. Now, at this point, they had these two wives, and they're both sisters. Unfortunately, I think there was a real rivalry between them. And he had many children. I think we talked up, he ended up having 12 sons. I actually don't remember how many daughters he had as well. But there was almost a competition between, and for a long while, Rachel was not able to give him a son. And Leah, who was the older sister, because she'd been a bit jealous, oh, he wanted to marry my sister, she lorded it over her. So again, he had a lot of family issues going on with, a lot of problems going there. But also, as they were competing, they also encouraged him to marry their servants as well, because they were like, oh, as Leah got older, she realised she couldn't have children anymore. She said, actually, no. Well, okay, you marry my servant as well, because she can give you more sons. So he did that. He goes, okay. And then Rachel's reaction to that was, okay, you've got to marry. So he ended up having many children, but he did eventually have a son with Rachel, which is what he, you know, she was his beloved. And that son was Joseph, who we know well from the stories. And now he actually became his beloved son. So we had the situation there. So the last bit was Laban tried to sort of swindle him again out of some of his wages and trick him. But Jacob actually had the last laugh on his uncle. He actually said to him, oh, well, when I leave, and I'm going to leave with your daughters, could you give me some of your livestock? And he actually, again, he tricked him again. He very carefully, because he was the expert in looking after livestock, he maneuvered them into the best position so that the best livestock fed in a certain area and ended up being the ones that he got to keep. So again, so once more, he's in a situation he had to flee because of his nature of being tricking people. And so he's fleeing his own with his own family, fleeing away from his uncle. So up to this point, Jacob's life is not one of great note. He's not living a great life. He's known as a trickster, someone who deceived people. But God had blessed him and spoken to him during these times. You know, he lay down to sleep on his journey when he went to visit. There's a verse in the Bible where he lay down to sleep in the desert and he dreamt of a staircase that extended to heaven with angels ascending and descending. And God appeared to him and said he was going to bless him and his descendants. So God has been speaking to him and blessing him during this time. But his focus had certainly not been on God and it had been on his own sort of strength. So when Jacob is then returning with all his huge family then in tow back to Canaan, after many years of service, he gets the news that Esau is approaching. Now, he doesn't know. He'd not spoken to him for years, but he knew his mindset with him when he left. He had to flee. So he'd been threatened to be killed because of his trickery. So he gets quite fearful, but he's sending some gifts to his brother. Sends some gifts to kind of, like, sort of stop his anger. And also, but he realised that he wasn't confident in these gifts at all. And he sent his family away. And this was the point where he just stopped on his own and prayed to God. And he asked for help to protect his family and his possessions. And he was left alone in the camp. And he actually, it's the story of him wrestling. And he wrestles. And there's a lot of stories about whether it was with God, or with an angel. But he wrestled. I'm going to read it out here. So it says, that night Jacob got up, took his two wives, his two female servants, 11 sons, and crossed the ford of Jacob. He sent them across the stream and sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip. So his hip was wrenched as he wrestled the man. And the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. The man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face and yet my life was spared. So Jacob's struggle with God was a symbol of his struggle with his inner self. God wanted to enter into a relationship with Jacob, but he couldn't do so until he admitted that he had weakness of self-reliance. He was always his own plan. It was always his own plan. It wasn't God's plan. God was blessing him, but he wasn't concentrating on that. He was concentrating on his own plan. Also, his deceit and his trickery, his whole attitude of ways he got things done instead of relying on God. So when Jacob refused to surrender to God, a mere touch on his hip forced him to surrender and admit that he had an utter need for God in his life. He had that realization. And that meaning significance of Israel, his new name, that change of name, a whole name change for him. God bless him, gave him this new name with a new identity. And it was to no longer be associated as the swindler and trickster of the past. He had a new creation, filled with God's blessing and a purpose to establish the Israelite nation. So this turning point in Jacob's life was this wrestle, and he got this new name. And we saw this morning Josie making that decision and being baptized. And that was that picture of her going into the grave and coming out with Christ and having a new life. This was almost the turning point in his life. This is where it all changed for him. He had this divine purpose laid on him. And from that point on, he was focused on God's will. He was ready for God's guidance, which is obvious in that response we saw where he said, here I am, that response. But actually, if you look at his character, you look at his life and what he went through, was that the expected response? We could say, okay, so it's a big change. Should that here I am, should that be a natural response? But actually, because we can be in that mindset of where we are, it's like, actually, what could have blocked him from having that here I am attitude? Well, one of the main ones is his past. He could have looked at it saying, well, why is God going to use me? Look at the mess I've made of things. And we can have that mindset. We can say, actually, even though we know we're forgiven, even though we know we're his, but I messed up a lot. I've made so many mistakes. I'm not the right person. You can't use me. So he could have discounted himself over these past failings. In spite of what God said about him and said, I'm making you new, I'm giving you a new name, he still could have focused back on the past. And, this morning, can you say, I'm actually standing here and I'm letting my past block me from saying, here I am. Because when we choose to follow Jesus, we are made a new creation. He wipes away our sin and makes us brand new. But you can still hold on to a nagging doubt that you aren't good enough or you're not the right person if you're not careful. But that's not what he says. He says, you are the right person. The other big blocker that could have blocked Jacob from having that, here I am, was actually disappointment. So Jacob moved into this focus on this divine blessing and purpose, but actually it didn't stop hardship hitting him. Two of the main ones, he lost his beloved wife, Rachel, and we all know the story with Joseph, his brothers, because again, of his family turmoil, his brothers didn't like him because of he lorded it over them that he was the favourite, and we all know the story, they hid him away, sold him into slavery, got rid of him. And his father thought he was dead for many years. So he did go through situations. And again, he went through where we talk about this, when we look at Joseph's story, there was a famine in the land. There was hardship on his family. He had to send his sons to Egypt for food. He went through hardness and he could have, again, once more said, well, God, you said, you were going to be with me, but now I'm facing all these challenges. His ability to navigate disappointment and still trust in God was vital in that. And actually, Jacob gives us an example of leave. God says he chose him to be Israel. He chose him. He said, are you able to live in what God says you are? He's choosing you for his own. Is there disappointment that's come in situations that you're saying, actually, maybe he's not chosen me? Because I'm facing these hard, difficult situations. Because actually what we can do is when we're walking, if we're ever walking along, you need to face forward to see where you're going. But actually I know, and I'm guilty of this, I'm walking along like this sometimes. Because you're looking back of what's happened in the past. But actually if you're walking properly on a path, especially if it's a bit of a rugged path, if you're walking like this, it's not good because there's a good chance you're going to trip up. I was watching a film with George the other day, and he said, one of the Jurassic Park films, and they were running away, and the person's running like this, and he said, Dad, why do they always look back? Why don't they just run really fast? And I said, this is something you're going to see as a key theme in many films. I said, they're always looking, and then they trip over or whatever. And I said, but actually, we laugh, but actually, we do this. I know I've done it. I'm almost running full steam ahead. And that's my life. And I'm sitting there going, why am I doing this? Why am I not looking forward? So both your things that have happened to you and your perhaps your former life or disappointing are things that can hold you back. And they can block how you respond to him. Now, Jacob, you see that. He went through that life. He wasn't a great person. He wasn't the person that God would have chosen him. He wouldn't have called him to do those things in his past. The end result was he pushed that aside because what God said. He gave him blessing and put him forward. And he was able to then, in that verse, he says, Jacob, Jacob, his response is immediate. Here I am. It's like that waiting in that terminal when they call out your name, responding straight away. And it was because he's like, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm focused on. This is what I'm looking for. And again, that disappointment side of things. Things in his life had not gone well. Are you sitting here this morning? And there are things in your life that have not gone the way you planned. And particularly, I mean, the thing in this story is you look at Jacob, and one of the things was family. Family, you see the complications and things in family. Was it something that, or friends that let him down and he struggled with? Is that your experience? Actually, there's been situations in your life where you've been disappointed and you say, God, why has this happened in my family? Why has this happened with my friends? And actually, we can let it control our whole character and our whole response to God. The experience we have, and it is such a challenge. And I had a picture, and I had this picture last week during the worship, and I thought, is it the right time to bring it yesterday? But I didn't. And actually, as I prepared this, it was like, okay, no, this is the right time. And I had this, and this was literally a picture. I always feel that God often talks to me through what I'm doing or what I'm seeing. And I was over in the King's Head a couple of weeks ago, and we were tearing the ceilings down. We were tearing the ceiling down in the bar. Now, if you look in there to start with, not anymore because we've ripped the ceiling down, it was just plaster. The ceiling was looked the same. This just plastered ceiling. But as we pulled it down, what was underneath was very different in different parts. There was one bit that, for some reason, it looked like floorboards on the ceiling, like boards you would put down, decorative boards. There was a section like that. There was another section that was quite modern, so it had insulation, and we pulled all the insulation. Another bit, which I think possibly might have been as old as the pub, because it was the old little tiny bits of wood and dirt as insulation, wattle, sort of wattle and dormant horsehair. So each, as we pulled down this uniform bit of plasterboard, what was underneath was a mess and a hodgepodge of all sorts of things. And I felt God saying that actually there might be some people, and you've put plasterboard up in your life and said, it's okay, I'll just put that over it and a plaster over it because then it looks fine. But you know what's behind the board. Now, we didn't. When we pulled that down, we had no idea what was going to be behind it. But in this picture I had is that someone's, you had a situation in your life where you've put plasterboard up and you know what's behind it. You've almost put it away. Instead of getting rid of it, you've put it behind plasterboard and never, like I said, I'm just going to cover it up. And you know what? In our lives, when we have disappointments or stuff we need to leave, it might be something, someone's let us down and we need to forgive them. We have that choice. Is that about a month ago, Keith spoke and he showed a video, Bluey video. And we have a choice when we have something that's weighing on us. We can keep hold of it or we can give it to Jesus. But when we give it to him, what we don't do is say, I'm going to give you this. Let me put it in a box and keep it and take it around with me. We don't do that. But actually, we can do that. Sometimes when we say to God, I'm going to forgive that person, are we really forgiving them? And this was the thing that, this was this word, was the felt that there may be people who feel that there's stuff that happened, and it might be a long time ago. Some of the stuff that was in those underneath that pastor's board was probably the same age as the pub, so 300 years old. Is there stuff in your life you've plastered over from 5, 10, 20 years ago? And actually, if you asked yourself, really, truly, have I let that go and given it to him? Have I given it to Jesus? Or actually, have I still carrying it with me? You can ask that question to yourself. Is it something? And I really want to encourage you this morning that I'm going to, we'll ask the band to come up for a bit of response. But this morning, I just really want to encourage you. The picture that Jacob, the story of Jacob is somebody who chose to follow God and to choose to say, here I am, in spite of things that happened to him in his life. In spite of who he knew he was. Do you say, actually, I'm not good enough? This morning, can you sit in this room and you say, actually, that's me. I make excuses of I can't be the one who gets called because of what's happened in the past. Is that you? Or equally, has stuff happened in your life that you've never been able to quite get over? That disappointment of either you feel let down by God, actually. It might have been a situation where you prayed about something and it didn't happen the way you expected and you feel, actually, God, I feel let down by it. I just want to encourage you this morning. He would love to deal with these things because actually when we're carrying around this baggage and not living in who our identity is in Christ, that we're an accepted child, a loved, accepted child of the King, and that he has got the best plans for us, it blocks us from living the way he wants us to live. So I just really want to encourage you this morning. If you feel that there's something that I've said in that bit there where you're saying, do you know what, I do need to let go of stuff. I really want to encourage you. We will have a prayer team. It will be over to the other side of the baptistry. But I just really want to encourage you this morning that you don't leave until you deal with it. Because he wants you to live in freedom. Jacob's life was a challenge. But towards the end, that response that he had was of someone who was free. Someone who knew that God had his best interest in heart. He didn't overthink it. He didn't think ahead, okay, well, what was he calling me to do? Now he just said, here I am, I'm good, I'm ready to go. So I'm just going to pray and then let the band lead. But I just want to encourage you. So Lord, We thank you that in spite of who we may have been, in spite of everything we may have gone through, Lord, you make us a new creation, Lord. You love us. You want the best for us. You have got a plan laid out ahead of us, Lord. And I just pray this morning, Lord, that you will, through your Holy Spirit, just speak to people now. If there are things in lives that need to just be pulled out and dealt with to give complete freedom, I just pray now that you speak into hearts now. I pray that a word will be the thing. If it's forgiveness, if it's a disappointment in you, Lord, whatever it may be, Lord, I just pray now your Holy Spirit goes ahead. Just speak into hearts now. I just ask for, we just want to see freedom, Lord. Your freedom. Pray that blessing now, Lord.